All right, we're live. Thanks for joining us, everyone, today. I'm here with Al Karim from Propera. Al Karim and I are both local in Alberta here, and we've had run a couple few circles with respect to CDL, which is the Creative Destruction Lab, an incubator to help learn ideas and kind of break through modern convention or conventional thinking around how to solve problems. Also, was recommended by Navaz Demji to have you on.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, Navaz is a beauty. He's a good friend of mine for at least 10 years. And yeah, he suggests we should have you on, which is, so I was like, of course.
Let's get on. That's fantastic. I haven't talked to Navaz in some time, but we overlap. We've known each other since we were kids.
Really?
And when we started Propera, actually, he actually gave us some very critical and fundamental guidance, which helps us get to where we are. So maybe I will write this down.
Yeah. Had him on the show a while back, and I think what was really different about Navaz's approach to property management is he really takes an asset approach to solving the problems versus like a revenue approach a lot of property managers take.
Yeah,
he's really, really, you know, considerate about prioritizing the long-term asset value that he's managing versus the kind of current quarter revenue. Really interesting story. And so I was really thrilled to be able to kind of get you on and kind of carry that forward. For everyone listening today, obviously we talk about getting to hell yes. And as Al Karim and I were just chatting a bit about like the concept of finding demand and when people are ready to buy, that's the whole purpose of this whole conversation. Part of my journey for discovering it, part of everyone's journey to discover it, particularly since the modern buyer has all the information. They may even know more about your company than you do when they go seek to buy you, right?
Absolutely.
Seek to convert. Yeah. Please, if you're listening, love the questions, love the engagement. On the live show, and then obviously this will be all on LinkedIn afterwards. If you want to go and ask questions, we'll be able to jump in later. And this is brought to you by IRCX, remote maintenance software for property management, help you saving triage and trips, saving you tons of money upstream and downstream, making your residents happier. And okay, let's kick it off. Little bit of background, and then what's a problem that you solve?
Yeah, so born and raised in Calgary, started my career in the hospitality business, so in and around hotels, developing hotels, operating them. I was a general manager. I saw a property go from a pile of dirt through to a cash flowing asset and was part of everything in between, franchising, financing, new hotel opening, working with the GC, being the GM. And that's sort of where my journey began in real estate. Fast forward a couple of years, I worked in private equity in the Middle East, and being born and raised in Calgary, came home to Calgary, worked at McKinsey for a while. And while I was at McKinsey, started building my own rental portfolio. And that's where I saw this interesting problem. And that's where Propera began.
And what's the problem?
Yeah, great question. So when I met my co-founder, Craig, and his background, he was effectively the CTO at Skip the Dishes. He was the head of technology.
Yeah.
And the technical team there from 30 devs to 300. So when we met, we realized there was this interesting nexus of, you know, a love for technology and a love for real estate. And I was sharing some problems around the multifamily space. As a small landlord, there aren't really great tools out there. There's a lot of great tools for folks who are, you know, 1 to 10 units, or really great tools for folks who are 20,000, 50,000.
Sure.
But in the middle of the market, I learned there's a lot of people like me and that they need a consolidated tool. They need something that will really solve the accounting problem. And so we at Propera actually started off with operational tools and we went deeper into accounting. And we realized that one of the biggest challenges is that folks struggle with accounting. They are really in the business of real estate for the accretive value of real estate, right? But they're not bookkeepers. They sometimes don't have that talent. And sometimes finding the nexus of people who are great accountants, bookkeepers, with the overlap of property management or understanding rental income is not as significant. And there's this trend across North America. I read something recently about 300,000 bookkeepers and accountants will retire every year for the next couple of years.
Yep.
What's that going to do? And so I think it's just created this interesting compression. And so the problem we solve at Propera is we are automating residential property management, specifically around accounting.
Mm-hmm.
We have a suite of operational tools to make all of that much easier.
Nice. And so digging on the accounting side, and obviously there's we can talk openly about Yardi as an example, right? Yardi is the biggest in the world right now, and they have their chops for in accounting as well. certainly have a beachhead in the marketplace. Yes. It's hard not to talk about PMS softwares and not like.
Yeah, of course.
It's not just the elephant in the room, it's the gorilla in the closet. Like they're giant. Yeah. And so when people are looking at software, and that's something they consider, I mean, it's hard not to come across them if you're doing a Google search. But like, so how is your solution different than like how they would approach it? And obviously it's, these are two different markets, two different everythings. And so hopefully that makes it easy to explain.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great question. You know, our focus is the small, medium enterprise, right? So mm-hmm. we say 25 doors to about 2,500 doors. Mm-hmm. What that means for us is, you know, you don't have an accounting department. You don't have a controller or a CFO. Right. So we need to consider that. We also know that in these organizations, you don't have an IT team, right? Mm-hmm. Most likely you as the leader or someone else, just making it work. And I think that is a really material consideration. And so at Propra, what we want to do is we have an all-in-one or a vertical SaaS. So we have accounting tools with the CRM at the middle, and then we have a suite of operational tools that we've built out. We've also identified partners who can help complement our product. But the only different thing is that we've just made one partnership and you get it. You don't have to worry about picking a series of partners and working through integrations. And then if the integration's clunky, who do you call? And what we've done is we've just listened to this very specific ideal customer profile.
Right.
And we've learned these are the things that are difficult. And we've just tried to make them easy.
So you shared a little bit at the very beginning how you kind of like started with operational software and moved into accounting. So how did you end up drifting towards this ICP?
Yeah, great question. And I mean, this is a very, very important question. What we figured out was we started off with, you know, in a similar space as IRIS-CX in maintenance, right? Because mm-hmm. we knew that time to resolution was an issue, right? And what happens often is that, you know, a resident or a tenant makes a request about a problem. You know, my bathroom light's not working. My kitchen faucet is dripping. Mm-hmm. What happens then is they struggle and, they kind of go back and forth, and there's a lot of questions that happen along the way. And so what we did is we launched an AI tool in early 2021 to make operations easier, right? So how do we reduce the time to market to solve specific problems? That was interesting. And so that was great. And we had a customer, like we launched this, we put this together in 4 months. Craig and the team did something magical. By month five, we had our first customer. We thought, wow, like we are on a rocket ship.
Yes.
Our customer said, this is interesting, but it's not enough. And I think that was my first lesson, you know, when you hear this sort of language in startup of vitamin versus painkiller.
Sure.
And so we went on this journey. We started and moved into accounting because a lot of our customers said, well, unless you can follow the money, it doesn't matter. And so we had two ways of going about it. We could either plug in to other platforms or we could build our own. And so what mm-hmm. we saw an opportunity to do was to do something unique specifically for this ICP, sorry, this ideal customer profile.
Right.
And that's where it began. And so we then went into accounting, and we launched that in May of 2022. And then in the fall of 23, a lot of customers came back to us and said, look, we love the accounting thing, but we need someone to do it. I don't understand this. Our customers, team members don't understand this. And so that's where the opportunity to introduce automations, to remove the talent barrier that you need to either have someone in-house or have someone outsourced to
right.
do that. We just want to make it an all-in-one.
Well, now the whole problem has been outsourced. Take the whole problem away.
Yeah, and so now you just do it all in Propra. You know, we're working with we're integrating a background check company. We're integrating a you know, a contractor marketplace mm-hmm. on some listing integrations. Otherwise, everything's sort of in there.
So then, like, if, you know, those are pretty broad solutions, like. Marketplace listings, like ILS, right?
Yeah.
Is that all going to, like, is it make it different that you're focusing on these like sub 2,500 doors that you can kind of like the problem they're trying to solve is best of integration for their size? Because that sounds like an integrated solution when you talk about like
it is an integrated solution in that way. What we're trying to do is keep the core of our product just an all-in-one. Right.
Right.
You've got your operations, you've got, you know, you got your accounting, you've got your CRM, you've got, you know, move in, move out inspections, routine inspections, maintenance, scheduled maintenance, break fix maintenance, leasing applications, announcements. There's a whole host of tools.
Yeah.
But there's certain things where we know we don't have expertise. Like ILSs exist. They're massive. They've already built critical mass. We don't need to redesign this. We don't need to rebuild it. Right. And so that's where we pull in a partner and we do our own assessment to say, you know, who's a really good fit for the market that we're playing in, the markets we could expand to for our ideal customer.
What's interesting about like the way you're approaching it is that the platform play is something that it really is. It's not available at the larger PMSs because they charge so much to be able to play in their space.
Yeah.
But it's there. I mean, my opinion is that they're cutting off their nose to spite their own face because they're carving out the innovative aspects and then putting on innovation wholly on their back, on their own backs, which they're just not really good at. And so like, I find it interesting that as a competitive like solution, you're bringing in, you're kind of going, you're zigging where they're zagging, right? You're bringing in the partners, you're making it easy to integrate, you're structuring all that stuff in there. I mean, as a reason to compete, but also to bring together a single single bill, right? A single bill of materials for that customer in that space.
Yeah, and I think the idea there also is we just listen to the feedback, right? So customers complain, and if they want to move to us, great. If they don't want to move to us, great. Like a lot of it is about fit in our sales process.
Sure. Right?
You know, we can call you 100 times, but like if you don't want it, you just don't want it, right?
Yeah.
And so I think one piece is fit. The other piece is we listen, right? We just listen to the feedback, right? Mm-hmm. People felt like, you know, our early customers told us this is clunky. So we said, okay. And sometimes we even tell our customers about our desire for feedback. And then sometimes we can, you know, make changes instantly. Sometimes it'll take months. Like sometimes it'll take 5 minutes, metaphorically. And I'm not allowed to say just whip it up anymore. And you know that as a founder. Yeah. And sometimes it takes 5 months because we want to bring the best practice of the industry forward.
Yeah.
And so in order to do that, it takes time. We want to talk to folks in different geographies with different portfolio types, with different, you know, asset mixes, some who have like, who have rain all the time, some who have snow all the time, right? Like all these different iterations we then bring in. So sometimes a customer will say to us, hey, make this change right away. And we'll say, we want to, but we need to understand that of our many, many customers that are already using it, we can't just change it.
Like
have to be there.
I mean, looking at your market, right? Is that you look at the market of, I'll just use the U.S. as an analog. Like, you got 50 million rental units in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And Greystar, that is the biggest by three, manages just 1 million of them, right? So you got
all of their portfolios, right?
All the portfolios. So you look at
student housing as well.
Super fragmented, right?
There,
you know, a lot of these mom and pops, they're the bigger part of the tail of the market, right? And they're all trying to solve the problem of managing the financing, because especially when you talk about the financing piece of it, that's the part that needs the accounting. So the problem, like the problem that Yardi has always been really good at is a really good accounting software, right?
Yes. And
for the people who are making that buying decision, the controllers, the CFOs, et cetera, the chief lending officer, or chief, I would say borrowing officer, but the person who's in charge of the balance sheet side, they need to have that data, because otherwise they can't run, because they can't capitalize. Right. And if you can't capitalize, you can't underwrite. If you can't underwrite, you can't develop. And if you can't develop, you're not going to get paid on your side of the moat. As a GPLP, right?
Yeah. And so kind of those two or three things you said there that were really interesting. One, you know, I watched a panel by Jay Parsons.
He's amazing.
The amazing economist, really dialed into the multifamily space.
Yeah.
He showed a slide that the, you know, the largest players in the US, and it's very similar to the Canadian market, obviously different scale, but they control about 10% of the market. But in our minds, I think you just see these logos everywhere. So you're like, oh, they control the whole market.
Yeah.
They control 10%. And you said 50 million in the US, which in my understanding would be, I would describe that as, you know, multifamily, single family condominium. Maybe if you include-
I don't think it includes condominium. I think if you include condominium, it might get 65 million.
There we go. Okay.
That's like a better number.
Yeah.
But I can't get the number. It's hard to find the real number because there's also a ton of stuff that's not even listed like as a number, right? So it's all like a combination of like, if you take like Yardi Matrix, ALN, CoStar, add it together and kind of find an average, it's somewhere around that number.
Yeah. Let's triangulate. Fine. 65 million.
Right. Yeah.
But if those large players control, let's say 10%, and there's, you know, you can find in tax data and in Canadian tax data, you know, the number of individuals that own like, you know, 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 units,
yeah,
which is roughly 10%, you're left with 80% of the market, right? Yeah. So like, let's say 80% of 70 million in Canada and the US, right? You're sitting on a cool 55, 56 million.
It's a huge market.
And that's split up in like 100, 500, 20 doors.
Yep.
And that's what we're focused on, right?
And they buy differently for different reasons, right? Like they don't want the headache. To your point, like they don't want to be operators. They want to be investors.
No. And I think also depends on where you are in your journey. Mm-hmm. Are you a property manager? Because you've been in this business and you're taking it over from someone? Are you a property manager because you saw the problem and you said, look, property management is tough, which it is tough, and kudos to everyone who does it because it's a very hard, very thankless business. So maybe you saw it that way. Maybe you are someone who just had an apartment and started renting it and you're like, oh, this is kind of interesting, and you scaled. Or another scenario we see is like we see third, fourth generation families who are trying to pass down these assets that they've built over time, and it could be one unit or many units, but their version versus, you know, grandpa's version or grandma's version is very different.
Sure.
Right. Sure. And so I think it depends on how you're doing it versus an institutional scale that does public reporting, you know, is in the form of a REIT, right? Has like, you know, has like a lending team, right? Yeah. That's, you know, looking at like debt and thinking about like leverage and asset management, like turning over assets. Very different businesses. And that's why I think sometimes a lot of people will say, well, you're competing with your RD. And I'll say, in some ways, yeah. But mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, no. Right? Because we're focused on a very, very specific ideal customer.
Is your ideal customer, so I just came back from the AIM conference last week, and there's a ton of talk around ancillary revenue. Like, is that something that is like a big topic in Canada as much as in the US?
I think so. I think it's getting there. I think there's a couple things, you know, I don't know if you saw, but McKinsey had done a study during COVID around tech adoption general across industries. I think, and respectfully as a Canadian, I'm going to say this, but I think we're slower to adopt technology.
Definitely.
In Canada. Yeah. So I think that's one consideration. And I think Canada's just slower to adopt some of these trends in the real estate space because we're a little more conservative, right?
Yeah.
In terms of how we run these businesses. And so
it's not as competitive. Well, the absence of competition creates, you know, apathy. And so it's a little bit, I'd say it's kind of, it's, we are competitive when we want to be, but it's pretty darn good, you know?
And the thing is like the market is not as big, right? Like if you show up in a large center, like, you know, Chicago, LA, pick any one of them, New York, right? Like it's a very different ecosystem. So, you think about like, I was talking to someone the other day, we were talking, he was saying something and he said, but like, that's just California. And I was like, what do you mean? Because Canada is the population is basically California, the rest of the country. And we were talking about like, you know, expansion planning, thinking about, but I think there's a huge opportunity in Canada because we know that, you know, a lot of non-Canadian solutions are operating in the Canadian market.
Yeah.
But are
they DevOps is massive too.
Yeah, exactly. Are they serving the needs of Canadians? I don't know. Right. Yeah. And so that's another niche for us is the nexus of those two problems.
Well, I think there's also like there's something to be said about building for that target market rather than kind of reducing your bigger product down to that target market. Right. Like they're certainly underserved. They're certainly a big part of the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, the tough part is finding them. So let's get to that. So how do you find that fragmented buyer? Right. Because they're dentists, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're small business people. They don't necessarily list. There's no banner. They're not on whatever. Like, how do you find them?
Yeah, I mean, even to your description of them, we have a customer, husband, wife. They work full time gigs, but they've grown their little portfolio and they're developing something right now.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find them? I think there's a couple things that we've done quite successfully. One is, you know, we're improving our online presence, and so we're actually launching a new website pretty soon with an enhanced AEO and SEO. So I think that will help us. Really thinking about content, right? What is the right content that these small landlords will or property managers are going to look for online that will then bring them to Propra? But the other thing is, you know, what are those, you know, physical water coolers per se and virtual water coolers per se? Like, where are the gathering places for us to connect with folks? And so we find that, you know, doing trade shows, we just did a very successful trade show at the Alberta Residential Landlord Association in Edmonton. You'll appreciate this data point, but like we booked a meeting from the trade show floor, right? A guy came to us. I remember him circling by the booth multiple times. And at one point I just interrupt, like I paused the conversation. I said, you know what? I'll be just hang here for 30 more seconds. I'm going to wrap this up. And he said, I need this. I need this now. And I said, do you want to do a demo right now? He goes, no. You guys are busy. I want to go walk the trade show floor. I said, how about later today? He said, no. I was like, weekend? He was like, no. Let's do something on Monday. And we actually ended up meeting on Tuesday morning, right?
Oh, perfect. And
that's an interesting thing to see when you see that sort of demand.
Sure.
Or we'll have, like we do, we'll end up having a call at like 5 o'clock on a Friday because like it's been a busy day for a small landlord or a property manager and they want to make time. And so those are interesting signals. And then I think the other thing that's really helpful is we ask our customers and peers, you know, can you make one introduction?
Sure.
They like make a bunch of introductions for me. No, that's not their job. They don't care, right? When I say they don't care, I mean, everyone has their own things, right? But if you ask, hey, can you help me think of one person in your network who we could help or who might be interested in learning more? And that's an amazing one as well.
Right? Yeah, no, the definitely, I mean, it's, and it is out of your control, but yes. They're very high intent recommendations, right? Like they're going to recommend somebody because they're vouching for them that has a problem to solve or may have articulated a problem to solve, or maybe they're sharing with somebody how they've solved that problem because of one reason or another. And then that's where that high intention comes in, which gets the hell yes conversation, right? Like we talk about scaling these people, scaling this outbound, like the repeatability of a sales motion gets challenged. You try and find people who are seeking to solve those problems.
Right.
Sure, we have SEO, sure we have all those things, but like that's a part that's always a bit of a, I gotta try new things and I gotta keep doing this. And even sometimes when something's working, sometimes you wear it out, like all of a sudden the open rates start dipping,
yeah,
whatever. Right. So how do you figure out who is looking to solve this problem?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple things that we've been doing is one is just practice, right? Like we constantly are testing different approaches. And naturally, obviously we have our outbound motion and you know, we have like cold sequences. But I don't really like those things. I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, can we build a relationship? Can we add value?
Yeah.
And I find in those conversations, if you actually just listen to what the customer is saying, sometimes at least like, and I push this with my team as well, but it's that if there's no fit, that's okay. And we can meet them in a different direction. Say, actually, like we've had companies call us and I'm like, you know what? You've got to really like, we had this guy in BC call us and he has 200 doors. It's like two towers. It's a very smooth operation. It's been operating for many years. They have very limited, turnover because of Vancouver, right? I was like, just keep using Excel, right? Keep using Excel and QuickBooks because he's like, we've got a pretty smooth system. And he was showing me his system. And I was like, yeah, you know, like if that's what you need, that's what you need.
Right? Yeah.
And so I think that's a piece of it is just listen to the customer. I think the other
thing. There are lifestyle businesses. Like there's people that have 10,000 doors.
Yeah.
And they have no plan to grow. They would like to holiday a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good business. Like who am I to tell them to change, right? I find that like, unless there's something that they have an objective that they can't, that's not obvious when we're able to reach, there's very little desire to change.
Oh, absolutely.
I kind of like empathize. I'm like, I wouldn't change either, dude. I'd stay with, you know,
don't change. So I think that's one thing. I think the other one is just listening in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
And they're complaining about something. And then you can even ask a question to say, you know, who do you know others that are struggling with this? Is this something that you face personally or, you know, and then that is an interesting because then they go down this path and they'll say, I know because I'm alone in this problem. I'm like, okay, well, you know, and we unpack that and almost like you release the agenda. I think sometimes you get on these calls with customers or you meet someone and you're solely focused on, I gotta get the hell yes. I gotta close this. Right.
Yeah.
But I think if you just release the agenda and say, hey, you know, let me help you. I think when you're helping that person, that's when it's when you're able to create significant value for them.
Yeah, I totally find that don't let the solution get in the way of solving the problem. Like, like we can kind of back off on the demo. If you can back off on the pitch and just really be genuinely authentic and curious about what their problem is. And to your point, it's inconvenient for both people. In a buyer's journey, if I'm trying to convince you of a problem that you need to solve,
yeah,
Yeah. That's just not worth it for either of us, right? I'm trying to impose my agenda on you. I'm trying to persuade you. Yeah. And I find that those are like, those deals, they might even creep in because they're being polite or helpful, or they think they're helping you out. But ultimately, you end up wasting both people's time.
Yeah, and then inevitably, it just falls apart.
Yep, so totally. They never close. And I've seen something that even close, and then they fall apart later. I mean, everyone's gotten super excited about something that's not really solving a problem.
Yeah. So I think that's it. And it comes back to the fact, it's like, you know, you just need to listen to what they need. And if you're solving the problem, great. If you're not adding value, that's fine. And maybe you'll be able to add value later, right? Yeah. Or maybe they'll make an intro. And we've had, like, you know, we've had folks who say to us, you know, I don't want to use this, but then they make referrals. And that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that's because we just built a great relationship, and that connection we were able to make really lends to the value creation.
Interesting. I mean, we ask referrals all the time, but I never really thought about, like, what's the psychology of, I don't need this problem, but I'll refer somebody else. Like, do you ever get a situation where someone refers somebody else, but in the action of making that referral, they kind of like start convincing themselves that they have to solve the problem?
Yes. So we actually had that situation. I sat on a panel with someone. They made a referral. So party number two.
Yeah.
They said, I'll never use this. And I said, that's okay. They made a referral. So party number three. Party number three signed up, and then party number two signed up. So the person said, I'll never do this. So it was very interesting. And it came out of the blue. Like, the email to us was, send me the pricing.
Yeah.
I was like, for what? That's what I reported. Like, for what? You know? And he was like, no, I want to come on now. And I think sometimes the other thing we forget is, especially with this ideal customer, and granted, 2,500 doors are very different, but it is and it isn't, depending on how it's run, if it's like a small, you know, personal operation. But the timing in their lives, right? It doesn't have a good time.
What's going on in their life? I completely agree.
Yeah. And so
there's something said about that discovery, right? This is kind of like part of the getting hell yes challenge. Yeah. Is like, and this was talking about Joe Summers with last week, was this whole creating demand versus capturing demand.
Yeah.
And the idea, the difference being that we believe we can create demand, but we really can just kind of like raise awareness around the problem. But then capturing demand is recognizing where they are at in their problem journey.
Yes.
Right. And like, it may be something that just because it's a problem, it's not a priority. Mm. And so it may be a problem that they're mindful of.
Yeah.
And it's slowing them down, but not blocking them. Right.
Yep.
It's like a tire that is not fully inflated. Right. Like, maybe I'll get to it later, or, you know, but a flat tire, you got to do something about. Stops you dead in your tracks.
Urgent and important, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And so those things are interesting to pull on, because trying to figure out what signals they provide to indicate that they're looking for a problem.
Yeah.
And that's part of like the filter that we're starting to lean in on a little bit more, is how can I find people that are, because to your comment earlier, like, folks that are perfectly good in their business, no intention to grow, maybe no external, especially if you got no external forces, like the bank's happy, the owner's happy, or maybe I'm the owner and I have no intention of growing. Like, you should just keep that thing on simmer. Don't change it all. Right. Yeah. Why would you do that? And then those that are seeking to grow, or maybe have external owners or have external bankers, or maybe going into a refi, like, they have forces that are pushing them out of their equilibrium. And that's like creating an opportunity for change. So it's trying to figure out, how can I filter on the list of people that are available and find the ones that are most likely to be seeking to solve a problem? Because I want to be valuable. Like, I mean, we got to do the thing. We got to send out the emails. We got to do the sequences, the cold sequences. But you really want to be valuable. Because, like, I feel like I'm wasting people's time by sending that 10 kilobyte email out, that's just like one more line in their inbox.
Delete. And they're just like, they just got to click delete again.
It's not even, or not even worth deleting.
Yeah. Oh, that's
true. It's just unread.
Perpetually unread. Yeah. You know, I think that's interesting, because that is also a reflection of, like,
like I think about professional services, you know, thinking about my consulting life, and I went from associate to manager, so I never had to start selling services. But the thing about the nexus of that, which is, you know, you need to show that you're an expert and then be available at the perfect time or be front of mind, right?
Yeah.
Which is really hard, right?
Yeah. So if you go away, you're gone.
Yeah.
So you do have to be cautiously annoying. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, yeah. I've got Jude Chewy on Thursday, and he was talking about that cautiously polite or politely annoying, like however it is.
Something like that. Either
way, I think people are conditioned. Like, I'm not endorsing wholesale spam, but there is a flow around being in front of people's inbox. Like, I literally get people like who have not opened an email forever, and they're like, so I'm at a conference, but, oh yeah, hey, I'm Guillermo. Hey, good to meet you. I get your emails. And I'm like, oh, good. It's like this playful acknowledgement that that's the game. And I don't like it, and you don't like it, but that's the game.
But I think on the other side, if you are, like, I like that, like, you know, like politely annoying, maybe that's the right way to do it, is because you're, is that you're engaging people and you're saying, hey, we're ready when you're ready. Right.
Yeah. And here's what we're doing that's different. Here's some more social, here's a little bit more social proof. Like, we're always trying to drip. Here's some social proof on you. And this gets to what you were just talking about. And we're getting much more diligent about this in the last 5 weeks, probably than probably the first like 2 years, is we're doing really disciplined user interviews.
Okay.
To create the testimonials and the captions around the social proof. And it might not be something that goes on the website, but nonetheless, we can pull a quote out of it that we are informed in terms of the value that we deliver. And we can reuse that conversation over and over again, because otherwise we're guessing. And you know what you said earlier, like when you're out there imagining a problem or imagining a perspective of a problem, you're really fooling yourself.
Yes. Yes.
You're wasting time, wasting everybody's time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we get to, in your conversations, like this is in terms of like getting to hell yes. How do you know that someone like you've done a, you know, let's 1,000 pitches, 10,000 pitches on Propera, and the pain points that you solve have changed over the years. Yep. Now you're honing in on a pain point that is obviously a combination of two pain points, the technology and the I always call it steering and the horsepower, right? So you're solving both right now.
Yeah.
And so to go find people that are seeking to solve steering and horsepower, how do you filter for them? How do you go in and know within one call that they're a legit prospect versus, you know, someone who's just out there in the awareness stage of their buyer's journey? How do you get them down funnel?
And we're learning how to almost think in a like a decision tree when you call, right? I'm a landlord property manager, first of all, right? What is my role? Right?
Owner manager.
Are you the owner, you know, receptionist? Are you the maintenance? Like, who did we get a hold of? Right?
Yep.
Who's calling us? That's also interesting. Like, who is calling and why? Right?
Yeah. Because
we've had people who are the property, like the person on site in a building say, hey, I want to find a better solution because I don't like what we're doing currently.
Yeah.
And they champion us up the totem pole, per se, right? Like, up the organization.
Yeah. Those are the best kind of deals because, like, you've got buy-in from the ground team.
Oh, there is a problem and they want to solve it and we become the solution to solve it, right? So I think that's a piece of the puzzle. I think there's something about, I like annoyingly polite or politely annoying, whatever. Yeah. Both make sense to me as a Canadian as well. Yeah. Sorry for getting it wrong, I'm joking. So I think there's some nature to that. And then I think there's something as well about, you know, you doing your research in advance, right? So what kind of portfolio are they? Are they a realtor? Are they a brokerage that does property management? Are they a realtor that does property management? And does their brokerage do property management, right? So there's a bunch of different versions of this. Or are they a new property management shop with like a really, you know, new and slick website? Or do they have kind of an older website? Which all are signals for you. Right. Mm-hmm. To understand where they're coming from, what their priorities are. You know, I think of one of our customers, I think about, you know, the fact that he's got a young family. And does he really care about some of the new stuff that we're doing? Not really. Like, it works really well for him. And then I'll show him something and he'll be like, oh, this is so cool. I didn't tell him that. I'm like, look, you don't care, right? Like, your process is nice and smooth, you know, and we'll introduce little efficiencies that create value for him. But it's really about how do you meet them where they are, right? Mm-hmm. And go in as thoughtful into the conversation as you can, and then just be prepared. Be prepared to adapt. Be prepared to like release your agenda and just kind of go with the flow and let the conversation take it where they are. Because I've been in conversations, and I remember one relatively large portfolio, and the owner really wanted to focus on something here, and I was focusing on something here.
Yeah.
And it's a very great learning for me. Right. And I don't, you know, maybe we'll land their portfolio at some point. I think we were too early for their size of portfolio and what they needed. Yeah. But it was a good lesson because I was like, he was going left, I was going right, you know? And that is an important thing to think about as you engage, and you're trying to build rapport instantly. Right.
Well, I think your comment around fit is really, it's really appropriate. Like it's not about, like it's about answering their requests. And the really good quote from Dan Sullivan that I'm really starting to lean in on is that as sellers, we have to think like we're buyers too.
Yep.
Right. And so like, you know, if you were to put out a want ad for your ideal customer, like think about that. Like, what will that look like?
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Like I'm looking for kind of like literally like a wanted ad. Wanted property managers / owners that own 25 to 2,500 units that have these problems here because this affects you there.
Yes.
Come talk to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right.
You know, and then because you're seeking fit. And so you're declaring what your fit kind of like qualification criteria is. Mm-hmm. And who wants to kind of like opt in on solving the problems?
I mean, it's that personas work that you know, we end up doing at some point and be it through your own research or like you look at YC, what they're doing, and you're like, I'm going to try this on my own, or you participate in an accelerator. That whole concept of personas is like that wanted ad, right?
It's funny that personas, so I'm starting to find that personas are twisted in that, like, if I look back at some previous personas that we did, we created a persona that fit our problem.
Oh, absolutely. But that's the problem of early stage business.
Yeah.
You're like, this is the ideal person. You kind of like square peg, round hole, kind of jam.
Someone that wants to buy. We wrote a persona that like, I want someone that wants to buy our stuff. It was literally how it was written.
Yeah.
What I'm finding right now, let's talk about this maybe earlier to somebody else, that like what I've shifted towards now is I just download job descriptions.
Okay.
Because that's the persona.
Yep.
Like if I wanted to sell to VP ops, find a VP ops job description. Because that's it. I don't want to have, I am so tempted to alter the chemistry of that persona because I want it to meet my objectives, but I don't have a vote in what that person's job is.
No.
You know what I mean?
And that's the funny thing is that I think we have to like listen to who we're talking to and what do they do. Right.
Yeah.
Which is the job description, right?
Which is the job description. So I'll download like a bunch of job descriptions and put them in a GPT.
Yeah.
I'll actually put, well, as you're putting pitches together, we pitch against the job descriptions in the GPT.
Interesting.
And say, rate this.
Yeah.
It's like, I actually, and then are there any gaps? Cause I want to relinquish my perspective as much as possible on the positioning, the pitch, the problem. Because I will over index on my solution.
Yeah.
How that fits, but I'm like the last person at the party. Or like I'm the last person at the party. Everything's already going on and it's happening and it's been defined and articulated and measured and matched. And I'm coming in and saying, hey, I've got a new idea. But my new idea has to fit their objectives, their goals, how they're measured, and all of that sitting in a job description.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm trying to like abandon personas, because personas, I find we just, because we create them as founders, we want to make them buyers, but they're not, they're made up people.
Exactly. I mean, it's a very good exercise, and that's what it is. The other thing I think about when we talk about this, and my brain is reflecting on this, is that in real estate, the job descriptions aren't accurate, right?
No, owner, they are
they're all president, yeah. CEO, property manager, director, right? Like sometimes there are people with like large portfolios who have the most nondescript title,
yeah.
Yet they are the decision maker. But when you meet them, they're just like, sure, you know, what do you want to talk about? And they're like nice, down to earth people because, again, that's my ICPs. Like they're small business yeah. owners, and they a lot of them think that they are small business owners, so they don't realize now they have a portfolio of 300 or 800 units. They still think they had, you know, they're still like a small entrepreneur who's getting their idea off the ground. And I respect that. Actually, I really appreciate that more than respect. I really appreciate sure. It's a balance, obviously. But because they just do a lot of things. And they know that in their organization, they adapt based on their team. So their team sure. is really strong here and here, and they fill in the void over here, right? And that is very interesting because in real estate, it's not really defined in terms of
what's because like at a smaller unit count, their functions don't emerge.
No.
Because they're just all you're a utility player all the time, just trying to solve the problems as they come up, designed to be reactive, right? It's a business that like if nothing goes wrong, everything is perfect. But the problem is that people live in these things and they're moving and all those things. And so it's like
feelings
doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're talking to market and people are out there and they've reached out to you, and especially if they're down funnel, and you go, so, you know, what have you considered? What other, you mentioned Excel or Sheets or whatever, like what other alternatives do they consider before they, you know, as they're considering you, like, you know, what do you, not just only what do you, not necessarily the software alternative, but like the people alternative, the outsource alternative, like the what other things do you compete against?
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's a couple competitive factors. I think one is like, what is your technology platform is one. Mm. I think the other one is opportunity cost. I think in, you know, could they invest in something different, right?
Yeah.
They need to hold their assets there in that place. I think you're competing with also what's happening in their lives, right? So, you know, I think, you know, some people argue that, you know, our biggest competitor is like the fear or the apathy of change.
Of course.
Do I want to? Do I want it? Do
I want? Well, I think that like that's a so the do I want to change is a bit of a, I think that's a closed lost reason.
Yes, like,
it could be actually they don't need to change.
Yeah,
and so don't sympathetic to that. Then don't change. Like
don't
need to change is maybe the better closed lost reason than don't, you know, or you know, don't need to change versus don't want to change. Like
yes.
They don't want to change. Sounds like you're blaming them. But don't need to change is kind of like an acceptance of their reality, of their stages in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that's a lot of it. So I think we compete against not just like direct competitors of like other softwares that do something the same or similar. We've got people who are using a combination of, you know, Excel, QuickBooks, and Outlook, or just like a shared email inbox, you know, which, but if it's working and they're doing it at scale, like we've seen this example for 800 units, actually, 800 units, one geography, not just think like it's like single family, multifamily, it's like a bunch of random apartments they're managing from multiple owners across geographies, like local and international owners. Like that's complex. Yeah. And they're doing it with that. So I think sometimes there's that. I think it's also a function of your team, right? Does your team want to change? Do you think you can get them to change? Do you think they'll buy into this? Do they feel like, you know, you know they really like the cadence of their role and they're happy? And if that's the case, that's fine. Because maybe you've got a really good thing going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it took time to get there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so when you kind of go down front with the choice, you hear objections.
Yeah.
What kind of objections do you get?
Yeah. I mean, we get them all, right? Like
yeah.
is a typical one, I think. You know, some people will
say cost is a funny one, right? Because I find cost is a in the case of cost, I feel like we always didn't do. There's something to be double clicked on that we didn't do a good job on,
yeah,
right? Because like cost is a one that like unless you're being directly compared against something,
yeah,
that you just on a straight up. But I always find that if we lose on cost, it's because I didn't double click or I didn't articulate the pain. Like this one prospect right now. As an example, they want to see pricing over email. I'd hate giving pricing over email.
Brutal.
It's brutal because it's out of context, right? So I've got to reproduce the pain points in an email thread and then position the pricing at the end of it, right? And here's what you get. I'm like, ta-da. But it's like it's not overly, but I always have this attitude that if it's $1 is too expensive for something that doesn't have a cost to it, right? Or an impact of not doing it. Yeah. If it's just $1, that's still too much money.
Well, and that's the challenge. If someone's using, you know, Outlook, Excel, and QuickBooks,
yeah,
and they're like, how much do you want me to pay per unit per month?
Yeah.
And they're like multiple, you know, they take that number, they multiply it by their doors, and they multiply it by their 12, and you're like, you want me to pay you that much money a year? And they think about that as something that's hitting their, you know, their wallet, yeah, versus thinking about, you know, what else could they do? And so I think you're right. It's how do we articulate the value that we're creating?
Yeah.
And price, when you hear price, it's a bad signal because you haven't done a good job or you haven't listened to their needs.
Well, so you have some buyers that jump right to price in the first call and you're like, well, you didn't give me a time to explain what we're trying to solve here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it happens. You can't stop it.
Yeah. And I understand that as well, because I think what they're trying to do is understand how much is this going to cost them? You know, what's the damage going to be, right? Like how big of a problem? It's almost like a framing. And so actually this is a very good one. When someone says that to us, I just go along with it because I think what they're doing is they're trying to size the problem that we're trying to solve.
Yeah.
So here, think about this, right? They're like, I have 500 doors. Let's use 1,000 because the math will be easier, right? 1,000 doors times whatever X dollars per door price times 12 months, right? They're like,
a buck a door, 1,000 bucks a month, 12,000 bucks a year.
Yeah, exactly. Or whatever that number is, right? Okay, so this guy is going to tell me how he's going to save me more than this number per
year. 12,000 bucks a year.
And that is interesting. So then what I do is I use that as a mechanism to say, that may be, how do you feel about that number? Some people are like, yeah, cool. And others are like, wow, you gotta be kidding me. And I'll say, well, let's talk about what we're gonna do for that. And the other thing I talk about is one of my favorite things I love to say to customers is, I want you to feel that by the time you've used Propra for a bit of time, that we are undercharging you and that we've left money on the table and that this is a really good deal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, really? I'm like, do you have customers like that? I'm like, absolutely we do. I'm like, we can make a reference. If we go down this process and you're right about to sign a contract and you want to talk to someone, I'll put you in front of someone.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that is interesting.
Well, I do like that positioning because like if maybe they're trying to save everybody time just by built, like, you know, is this thing a Labrador or a lunchbox, right? Like what is it really, yeah, right? Yeah. And so like the thing that we need to, maybe that's what we're trying to help for. Because maybe they're trying to, like, sometimes those conversations, let's say for example,
you just compared a Labrador and a lunchbox.
Because they're totally different. They're just totally
different. Yeah. I think you're going to go like Lada or Lamborghini, but okay.
No. This is totally different, right? Maybe they're just trying to filter for like, why are we spending all this time in this meeting?
Yeah.
And maybe the premise is put back on their team members to justify the cost of even this conversation.
Yeah.
Right? Because like some of these conversations I find like, it can get pretty expensive when you consider the people that are involved in a meeting, right? And especially through a buying cycle. Let's call it 4 or 5 meetings for a fast deal. And you're going from like 2 people to 4 people. If you add it all up in the hours, it's pretty expensive for a company to consider those things.
And when you think about your costs too, right? Like
yeah,
you bring yourself, maybe your product manager comes because they want it. There's a nuance that you want them to talk about that the customer wants to talk about or wants to give feedback. Maybe you have another salesperson, maybe you have an expert. Mm-hmm. Suddenly using one of your customers' time as well for a reference.
Yeah.
It adds up. So I think being critical about, you know, where you are in the process and are we adding value or not? And sometimes I find there are people that we just follow up with every once in a while. And then sometimes we just ask directly and say, hey, look, if this is not something you're ever going to be interested in, that's okay. And sometimes people say, you know what, we're not going to.
And then they like that permission to say no.
They just want to then you just leave them alone versus saying, oh, you know, like we're going to follow up. And they're like, yeah, follow up in 6 months. And then 6 months, they're like, you know, it's not a good time.
Yeah.
And because I think people are also just polite. They're humans, right?
Like, but so what I find is that's where the content play comes into action.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, probably not right now, but here's what I'll do. If it's okay, I'll put you on our newsletter because it's just one more email. They don't care. But they care less because they give them permission for the newsletter. But now you're kind of like, you're satisfying the top of mind conversation.
Yep.
You're creating value with intention,
yeah,
and you are like not spamming them with email.
Totally.
Right. And then they just come online when they come online, you know?
Then they can engage when they want and they can read or not read or whatever.
Yep. And so they do click on it and start clicking on things and you can kind of reach out with an email. Hey, whatever. Saw you click on the email. I'm curious if now's the time.
Yeah.
Last time we chatted about this, are you interested now? Nope. Just read the email. No problem. It's okay. It's just better to say, to give them permission to say no.
Because
then you can just move on. Because otherwise you're compelled to respond with some thought and intention. And that just takes a lot of time for someone who's not looking to solve something.
Yeah. And maybe the framing of all of that is, you know, maybe that's part of the responsibility, right? You're asking them for their time. Give them the ability to almost get the conclusion they need, right?
Yeah.
If it's a good fit, sell. If it's not a good time, delay. If it's never a good fit, just say that and that's okay.
Yeah. And then we'll just keep you on the newsletter list. Like literally put you in the newsletter. So just keep on getting emails and they're always there. That's easy for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people want the knowledge, but don't want to sign up for the product. And I'm okay with that too. Right.
Totally.
Let them tap into that knowledge. Look, we have something to share. Hopefully it's helpful. That itself is good value creation. Right?
Yeah.
That may lead to a referral. And if we obviously do paid referrals, but there's some people who don't ask for a paid referral. They're just like, hey, I know someone who might, this might help them. Great. We love it.
And do you guys do for all of your outbound campaign, given your audience?
Yeah.
So referrals are lucky breaks, so to speak. But how do you get the rest of the motion going? How's the rest of your go to market?
Yeah. So, we have an SDR function. We make outbound calls. Obviously we do prep before that. We, understand who the ICP is or who we think the ICP is that we're trying to get in touch with, who the decision maker is. But we also just kind of are prepared to engage whoever we get on the phone. Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a piece of it. I think we've got, what I think about is warming campaigns of, a newsletter, staying in touch. How do you stay in touch? What ways to do that? And then around events, we use that as a catalyst. So, hey, we're going to be in Edmonton, Alberta Residential Landlord Association announced their trade show. Are you going to be there? We're thinking about it. Then a week later, we're like, guess what? We're going to be there. And sometimes we're not going to be there. And so we still engage people and say, hey, this is coming up. Don't forget to go. Because some people, we've had customers email us to say, hey, send us the contact information or the registration information, or I want to attend this. And that itself is helpful, right?
Interesting. I like that point.
We do a bit of that. And then it's just about staying in touch.
Right? Yeah.
And finding ways to engage people. And looking at our closed loss, closed won, right? Yeah. Looking at that, the closed ones, right? How do you talk to, the people who are using your platform, reach out, talk to them, net promoter score, but then ask them to promote it too.
Yeah.
Right? Do you know one person, right? I find if you ask for one person, it's very easy. If you're like, hey, do you know anybody? Anybody feels like a million people.
Right? Yeah. You know, it's very discreet. The ask is very bottled up. You say one person.
One person. Because if they give you two, awesome. But if they give you one, it's way better than you had 5 minutes ago or 3 days ago, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's very interesting. And then I just think about my favorite thing though is when we go to trade shows or I randomly am somewhere in an airport or walking down the street and I run into a customer and they hug me. That is interesting.
Well, yeah, I like the trade show setup where you're talking to a customer and talking to a prospect at the same time.
Yeah.
And your customer is selling the prospect. That's the dream scenario.
But my favorite is when they hug me because that is an interesting signal because they're like, we have a bond, right? Yeah, yeah. We've created value. There is something special. One of my customers, we become so close. We go for breakfasts, at least every couple months. His wife's, I can't remember what birthday party, but we were me and my wife were invited. And she was like, do we know these people? I was like, honestly, not really, but I love him. And I'm sure we're going to love his wife. And we're going to, and that is interesting, right? Or we have people who will come swing by the trade show booth and wait to talk to us because we just have a relationship. And that is very interesting because that is a very strong signal of the value we're creating.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. So when you're talking about, when you started out, think about your younger years, think about someone who's coming into proper the first time, or even just a colleague or peer, and you want to give them some advice about hell yes, about how to get to hell yes. What do you like to share?
Oh, I can clearly remember this. I remember I was starting at McKinsey and I had this binder of initial readings and I met this guy as I was like staying in this hotel and we were in the elevator and he was like, he saw the name and he goes, you know, the only advice I'm going to give you as a, he was a former consultant and investment banker. He said, the only thing I'm going to tell you is listen, just like hear the words they're saying, understand them, and then do something about it. You don't know what they're going to say. Don't assume you know what they're going to say. Just listen. And so I think that's the best advice is hear the problem, hear their need, then respond.
So the listen part, I think what's interesting about the listen part is it actually requires more preparation than the talk part.
Oh yeah.
Cause you got to listen, you got to be prepared for questions to listen for.
Absolutely.
And be ready to kind of like, and that's where I think that, you know, all lawyers would be good, great salespeople. Cause you just, you prepare that kind of that litigation element,
oh, yeah,
ready questions to pull them into a spot, right. To listen for it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, my amazing, beautiful wife is a litigator.
And oh, so there you go.
I learn this all the time because I see.
Well, because you're unmatched.
Yeah, I'm wildly unmatched, right? And it's interesting to see like her decision making process, her problem solving process.
Yeah.
And because you don't really know the client's problem. They call you and they instantly want help. How do you do that, right? Like you have to listen. You have to ask thoughtful questions. You have to add some color in there. So it's almost like you unfortunately have to interrupt them to say like, okay, wait, you've just said something. There's some assumptions here, right? Give me a little more, right?
Well, and that's what I find like interesting to ask the question. What else have you tried, right? Like, are you looking at other software right now? Like, if you don't ask that question, you do not have the good temperature of where they're at.
Absolutely not. So,
you know?
That's a great question. What would you, can I ask you the same question? How would you respond to that?
For me, it's definitely, I would prepare my questions ahead of time.
Okay.
Because the act of, I get excited in a conversation and I'll want to chase the thread down, but having the questions that I need to understand ahead of time,
just
frame a constructive conversation for both people.
Mm.
That's a part that I really would, I would say, make sure you ask, focus more on the questions than you, than the answers you want to hear. That would be something that I would
focus more on the
people. Okay. Like there's a great saying came from one of our customers. It was, the person that asked the questions controls the conversation.
Oh yeah.
Which is like, ooh, yeah. Very
and
it's very true. And I think that like, if you prepare the conversation, the question, and then here's the thing about like preparing the questions and practicing is that it won't feel like it's staged. It'll feel natural.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's where you got to release the agenda and just kind of use the tools that you have. And I think you're right. You have to almost practice and prepare, right?
Yeah.
You have to think, what are the scenarios? What could they say? And do that work. And I think sometimes even thinking about it in your head versus actually practicing out loud is very interesting, right? Mm-hmm. So when we have like junior members come on in our team, we say, don't just like say it to yourself, say it out loud, right? You'll hear it and you're like, oh, it doesn't sound good. Or I need to say it differently. So like my favorite thing to do is when we have a new team member join, I say, you know, what is PropRa? Because someone's going to say, oh, I've joined this new company. It's PropRa. Great. What do you do? And I say, well, let's just do it again. And let's do it again. And a really good friend of mine actually had done this when I was interviewing for consulting. We did that in his kitchen. I remember he was like, let's hear it again. Let's hear it again. And I think that emotion, that preparation is so valuable.
Yeah, completely. Because then you're prepared to listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, who should we have next?
I met someone in my proper, I've been in touch with him since, but I met someone early in our proper journey, this guy named Jarrett Nixon. He is a former property manager. He's doing some very interesting things in this space. He's got great operational chops. He grew a portfolio from like, I think it's like 100 and something units to up to 2000 units, on the property management side, and like thought about tech and like just did all this tech consolidation. And so he's actually giving us great advice along our journey.
Yeah.
He might have something very interesting to say.
All right, cool. I'll reach out to him. We'll get connected
I'll connect you guys. Yeah.
He's awesome. Thanks a lot. All right. And how can people get a hold of you or if they're interested in PropRa?
Yeah. I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn, info@propra.tech. Would love to sort of share what we're doing and thank you for this opportunity. I mean, there's been some great things here that we're going to chat about in our sales check-in. So,
oh, that's awesome.
It was great to see you. I feel like you and I could do this for hours. So,
oh, I know. We got to tie it up. There's work to do. There's outbound to do.
But it's awesome, man. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to watching the next one as well.
All right, on. Well, everyone listening on live, appreciate you kind of tuning in. Obviously, this will be on LinkedIn Live and in our events, both on Upreams and my threads. The podcast will be out in a couple of weeks. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, hit subscribe and download. That's always good for everybody. Or add ratings and comments. Those are always awesome. Follow us on LinkedIn and follow me on LinkedIn and Upream on LinkedIn. And you'll get invited to future shows. They'll show up in your feed. And we always love all the engagement and contributions. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Upream.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye, everyone. And we're good.
We're good.